I had my children on the floor. I was on my favourite blanket that my grandmother gave me on the floor like a cat.
And I realised in that moment the potential of what our bodies can really do as women.
Like, I could feel his head. I could do my own internal, like, yeah, his head, I could feel it.
I was in tears. I was just in tears and overwhelmed with gratitude.
Hi, and welcome to the Natural Birth Podcast, the podcast that is bringing embodied birth wisdom from women from all over the world sharing their natural birth stories. Don't forget to subscribe and download so that you can always have access to these empowering and positive natural birth stories. Hi, my name is Anna, also known as the Spiritual Midwife, and I am the Natural Birth Podcast host. I'm a midwife and a childbirth educator, and I assist women in optimizing their chances of having an empowering and natural birth experience and a nourishing and healing postpartum. I offer holistic birth preparation and postpartum online courses worldwide for the conscious mama wanting to prepare emotionally, mentally, physically, and spiritually for her birth and for her postpartum. And if you want to know more about me and what I do in the world, then visit me at thenaturalbirthcourse.com. If you had a natural and empowering birth experience that you would like to share with the world, then you can email me at annathespiritualmidwife@gmail.com, and maybe your story will be featured on the Natural Birth Podcast. Now let's dive into today's episode. Today on the Natural Birth Podcast, we have Babalu. Babalu is a mama of two living children from New South Wales, Australia. She is a boundary-crossing artist, a decolonizing advocate, an access bars practitioner, and an organic gardener. And today, she will speak to her six pregnancies and her two full-term births to her son and daughter. Babalu was late in deciding to become a mother. Not until her 36th year did she come to the decision that she wanted to have children. A big part of that might have been the result of her early terminations and miscarriages that she experienced in her early 20s. Today, she will so graciously walk us through her story of conceiving very young, terminating, miscarrying, and finally birthing her babies at 36 and 40 years old. Curious about Babalu? Find her at babalufeyeyewitness.com. Hello, Babalu, and welcome to the Natural Birth Podcast. How are you today?
Hi, Anna. Thank you. I'm feeling wonderful today. It's a glorious day here on country. This evening we're moving into the super blood lunar eclipse in Sagittarius. So what a better day to come together and talk about, you know, the fullness of birth and birthing. And yeah, I feel really honored to come and share this experience with you. Thank you for asking me, Anna.
My pleasure. I am so grateful that you wanted to come on the Natural Birth Podcast and share your six pregnancies, your two live births and babies living. And I'm sure that whatever is going to transpire today, whatever is going to come through both of us, it's going to serve all that listens. And before we dive into your birth stories, I would love for you to do acknowledgement of country for us sitting here on Bunjalung country.
Thank you, Anna. Yes. So, yes, Anna and I are sitting next to the Doorumbul River, which is known as the Brunswick River as well, here on Bunjalung country. And I'd like to acknowledge the old ones of this area. and their presence here with us each and every day. I'd like to acknowledge the traditional owners that are living on country and the emerging ones that are coming through. I know that country supports me in all my actions and the ways of being. I love living on this country, and I'm very grateful to share the living and growing of my children on this country. Thank you, Bundjalung, for all that you bring and receiving us here today.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Babalu. And I also want to acknowledge that I have been so held by this country for 6 years. And actually this week I'm coming to an end of living here, which is really big for me as well. And I am so very grateful to have been so warmly welcomed on country by the people here and really by the land. I felt very nurtured living here. So thank you, Mother Earth and country, for holding us through these stories that we're now going to dive into. So with no further ado, Babalu, I'm going to hand it over to you to share with us wherever you'd like to start when it comes to your 6 pregnancies, carrying children, birthing children, if you'd like to start.
Thank you, Anna. Well, it's pretty, I would say, auspicious to see where we are sitting, yet as all things are perfect, of course we're sitting where we're sitting, because I'm looking across to what we locally call Christmas Beach, which is the sort of the north sandy shore of the Doorumbul River at the river mouth entrance to the ocean at Brunswick Heads. And that piece of land that I'm looking at holds such sacredness to me, and my story of being a mum. I pretty much spent my entire pregnancy, which was my fourth pregnancy in my life, but the pregnancy that I carried full term, my daughter Brahmani, I pretty much spent the entire pregnancy on that little piece of sand over there and swimming in the waters there. And her name Brahmani came from the Brahmani kites that hunt down here at the coastal region and just live up in the eucalypts, just up the hill a little bit. So I actually thought I would birth in those waters right there was my intention. But I didn't. I birthed in the Mullumbimby at the time, the Mullumbimby Birthing Centre in the Mullumbimby Hospital. But yeah, to be here today, sitting opposite this land is very sacred for this conversation, I think. And as you mentioned, I have had quite a few pregnancies with 2 living children. The first of my pregnancies occurred as a young woman of 20 years. I was probably 20 years. And at the time, my menstrual cycle wasn't set as it became later in life. I only came to my menstrual cycle at 18, and I had 1 menstruation at 18. And then I had a couple of menstruations through my 19th year. So even into my 20th year, I really had no cycle. So when I fell pregnant, I was very naive, and I hadn't had very much education at all around being a woman and around menstruation, and like sort of very, very limited, you know. So I'm 55 now, so I was at school then, you know, my schooling years were like in the 80s. The 70s and 80s, and
Very limited.
Limited, yeah. And coming through a Catholic, you know, upbringing, there was no discussion of the body. You know, I mean, yeah, when I had my bleed, I didn't feel I could turn to my mother to ask what to do. I just went and, you know, got one of my sister's tampons and very poorly placed it in the tip of my vaginal opening and walked around like that for a while going, well, this feels really strange. So, you know, so again, really, I came to really naive and then came through into, you know, coming into sex and things with no discourse. Yeah. So, yeah.
Which so, is most women's stories.
Truly, right?
Still today, it's most women's story that the first time they have sex, it's just, yeah, they've heard about it or whatever, but there's no actual talk about the sacredness of it or love or that it should be on your turf. Nothing,
truly,
really.
Truly, yes. Yeah. So, yeah, so I really came to my sexual beginnings through, you know, a lot of rejection, yeah, shame, you know, all those things, like you said, that are very common, particularly, I don't know, I've grown up in an Australian, you know, mainstream Australian culture, and that definitely was what was happening at that time. Trying to change that for my daughter, who's 19 now, but yeah, but it's still in the culture quite often. Anyway, so yeah, so the first pregnancy in a cultural sense, so, you know, I met a man who was sort of 9 years older than me and fell pregnant within the first 3 weeks of us being together, and not even sure, I can't even really remember how I worked out I was pregnant. I think it was because I was feeling nauseous and things, and I was living with women and men who were quite also a bit older than me, you know, 7 to 8 years, 9 years older than me, and those group of women used termination as contraception, basically.
Right.
So if they fell pregnant, you had a termination. Yeah. So I was whisked away into having a termination.
Yeah, without even really thinking about
There was no... Yeah. I didn't even acknowledge that it was a potential life, a potential baby. I didn't know what it meant emotionally in connection to the man I'd fallen pregnant with. He also was of just saying... You have to have a termination, you know. So I was taken to a place that existed at the time in Sydney to have a termination, and it was extremely traumatic. You know, you were strapped up in a chair with your legs up, and you experienced the termination, and then, you know, you were given a minute of counselling, and then that was it, you know. And so then, you know, and taken home, taken back to my house, and, you know, the older friends giving me juices and things like that. So I hadn't equated that with potential life, you know. And then I fell pregnant very quite soon after that as well. And at the time, then the man and I had moved. We were living in a very remote area, and we drove back to Sydney, and I had an actual termination in a hospital. Had a little bit more counselling, but still very little. And then another, quite soon after that, I had a third pregnancy, and but I miscarried that pregnancy.
Was that, so you, did you intend to keep that?
I didn't know I was pregnant. Again, because of my cycling, I didn't know, and I actually had consumed a lot of drugs at the time, and I think that just kicked in. My feeling is that kicked in the termination, the
miscarriage.
But then I had a DNC. So my experiences had been falling pregnant, not consciously, and terminating, and then miscarriage. So after that, I was really quite traumatized and things. So I made a sort of real understanding with myself to not fall pregnant and to take greater care in that. And I sort of actually came to thinking that I didn't want to have children.
Well, you probably connected it to so much kind of trauma.
Truly,
in a sense.
Anna, I think.
Yeah, going into the hospital system and doing those procedures, they're very invasive.
Truly.
Yeah.
So I'd sort of said no to children. And I continued to be with that partner for a little bit longer. We were together for, you know, about 4.5 years or something. And then we separated and I started, came up here. And I mean, I had been living here already, but started university here and, you know, met different people and just started educating myself around, you know, the sacredness of being a woman and what that meant, and my cycle really settled in by the time I was sort of 24, 25, you know, cycling each month and but I really didn't give much heed to what I sort of put those experiences somewhere else. I'd sort of put them somewhere, you know, and you know, and was very full in myself and very I've always you know, really had a beautiful connection to the Mother Earth and her beauty and supported by her. And, you know, I was a gardener and I was studying environmental science and the stories of the Bundjalung country and Aboriginal knowledges and all sorts of very beautiful and sacred practices. So there was a real richness, you know, and I was a practicing performing artist, and then I entered into a relationship that, you know, went for close to 20 years. So there was very fertile ground there, and a lot of friends started having babies and I started going to births, you know. So I became a very favorite doula of friends because I think I brought just such a beautiful presence to the birth. I could really hold a nice space, and that just completely, I mean, attending my first birth, it was so sacred and amazing and beautiful, and I think it only hit me then what was the fullest potential of those pregnancies that had come before. Like, I really wasn't till I saw the baby crowning and then her head and then birthing, and I was just went, you know, I couldn't believe that this is the end point of a pregnancy, this life that, you know, in that beautiful space of life and death dancing there, you know, that mystery of it could go either way, but hopefully it comes to the fullest, you know, but really accepting that, wow, this space. So I did become rather, I really liked it. I really liked that space, so I attended quite a few births over the next years, and I just, yeah, I loved it. I loved the dance of the pregnancy with my girlfriends, and then attending the births, and of course there was some deaths, you know, there was some stillborns, there was miscarriages, there was deaths a few weeks after babies were born. Mm. It was the full field, of course, you know, which is life.
Yes.
Which is this sacred life and death is, you know, we sign up for both.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
So, and in that, I learned so much, you know, so much about myself as a being and then so much about the greater human condition. It was a very, very fertile time. And, you know, of course, my girlfriends, I was... you know, a few years older than them and then quite a few years older than some of them. And they're like, Baba, when are you going to have babies? And I was like, I'm not having babies, you know. I was an environmental activist at the time as well, and, you know, I was a performer and, you know, stayed up very late doing shows. And I was like, no, babies don't fit into my life. We were very involved in the psytrance music scene, forest parties, and, you know, I was having a pretty wonderful time without thinking about having children, but all my friends around me were, you know, coming onto their second children and things like that. So Warwick and I were sort of like, we were making CDs instead of making babies, you know, going on tours to Europe and around Australia in different parts. And yeah, but these little beings were tickling. They were tickling behind my ear, as I'm sure the listeners, some of them have experienced. I mean, when there's someone, and you yourself were saying, you know, when they're there and they're tickle, 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 and you're like, yeah, tickle, tickle, tickle. And it was interesting because it never felt like the babies that, or the potential beings that were coming had wanted to come through before. that it felt like something different and new. And I think because I was different and new and possibly could hold that space in a different way. Mm. Yeah, so, as life would have it, I ended up journeying to Italy with the man that I had had those pregnancies with, the earlier three pregnancies. And we had never, and we're lifelong friends, we're dear friends up until this day, you know. So, and we had never discussed, not once did we discuss what that was and how that had gone down and what that meant to us and things. But in hindsight, I look back and I think it was a big part of why the relationship also ended, because, you know, we'd had all that life experience together. And we hadn't talked about it, but it was there. So I can imagine I would have been quite, like, scared of falling pregnant again, and he probably would have been quite scared of me falling pregnant again and things. So I remember we sort of became less and less and less sexual. So anyway, he invited me to travel with him to Italy to meet his family over there, because he had since... he had been an adoptee and in Australia, but had then found that his family, and it was mostly in Italy. So he'd been a few times, and so he invited me. He wanted me to meet his nonna and things. So I went along, and of course Italy, I don't know, I haven't been there, but the women especially just were like, you know, I was probably like 35 at the time. And they were like, where's your babies? How are you here? Where are your babies? You leave your babies at home? Where are you? Is this your wife? And I was like, what the? And it just went on and on wherever we went. And I was like, oh my gosh, what am I being told here? Like, is it time? And I knew I wasn't going to go have babies with this man, because we went intimately together. And... but I did have my partner of 9 years at the time, who we were having quite a difficult time in our relationship, and that's why I went away, just to have some space. But we had talked about having children together, so something seed, I don't know, when, and you know, and all the food and everything. So, you know, I was putting on weight and going, am I getting ready to build something? It was very funny. And I came back and... those mamas had seeded something for sure. They had planted some seeds, because then I talked with my partner at the time, and we just, yeah, something shifted in me. I went, yeah, I really would like to have a child. And you know, blessed be, I was able to, because again, it wasn't until time later that I had close friends who were also of more mature years, you know, because I was 35 then and I had other friends of those years, and then younger friends. It had never come into my thinking about people who wanted to have babies and then couldn't, and who had tried many times, or just, you know, so I only had my lived experience at that time. I mean, I'd had the friends who'd lost babies in birth and pregnancy and things like that, but it was a new thing of going, oh, I'd like to have a baby. And because of my pregnancies, thought, well, that would just happen. And then meeting people to know that women to know that wasn't the case. So that was another massive learning, Anna.
Yeah.
And a massive acceptance of, oh, right, so this may happen or may not happen.
Yeah.
Fortunately for me, and I feel incredibly blessed, it did happen, you know, so we did a little... We went back to the sacred grounds of where I had been living for those first three pregnancies, and we did ceremony there, and, you know, Brahmani was conceived, came in the next day when we made love, and she came through, and yeah, that was beautiful. And the pregnancy, the pregnancy I spent here at this place here at the river, and I had a beautiful, amazing pregnancy, you know, just I had the space, I wasn't working. I stopped performing. I did my last performance when I was about 6 months pregnant. It was the night of the 9/11 incident. in the world.
Gosh.
So we were performing and in Byron Bay, and suddenly the bar put on all the TVs that were there. At that time, there were still TVs. And we stopped the gig and we were all watching. And then we left, and my partner and I, we sat up all night watching, as I'm sure most of the world did at that time. And I was quite pregnant going, what, you know, there was that thing of what's this baby coming into? Because, I mean, it felt like we were going into war, wherever something huge was happening. You know, since then, you know, there's been a lot of dissemination of that information and looking at it from different perspectives. But on that night, it seemed like, oh my gosh, and it was frightening, you know. And it was, I think, one of the first times I had that thing of being the mother, you know, the protective, like, oh my gosh, like, you know,
mother instinct.
Yeah, like, yeah. I have a baby inside of me and this is happening. And even though I wasn't directly threatened in that moment, but I remember just that thing of like, this isn't just about me now.
Yeah.
This is also about this being. So in my capacity then to really embody being pregnant had developed a lot more than my earlier pregnancies, where I hadn't even looked at it as being a being of a human form or anything. So there's a lot of growth in those years. There's a little brush turkey here. Hello. And but my pregnancy was very beautiful. So lots of swimming and walking and yoga and eating beautiful organic foods that I grew in my garden, and very nice. So I would come down here most days. It's nearly every day, swim, walk. And so I thought I was going to birth here. I really did. I'd wanted to have a home birth, but my partner was very scared. And maybe he knew something that I didn't. Because, you know, when I did birth, I was in the right place to birth. But I thought I was going to have the birth here. So as the day approached, like, I was in labor for sort of mooching around for about 2 days. And
can we just turn back to, so how many weeks were you when you started feeling like you were niggling or mooching, as you call it?
I was full term at 41 weeks, I think, if I remember. It's a long time ago.
Yeah.
But I was definitely full term. 40 weeks is considered full term, is
no,
it?
No, full term is 37 weeks to 42 weeks.
Oh,
so, yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I love that you have those facts.
Well, so, that's one of the perks of being a midwife.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure I was 41 weeks, Anna.
Yeah.
Mm.
Which is really normal, actually. Mm. Most first-time mamas, statistically, will have a baby at 40 plus 10, which is 41 plus, what is that, 3? Yeah.
Yes. So there was no, I definitely hadn't been given the, you know, you're overdue or anything like that.
You were in Mullumbimby. You were going with a doctor who is quite famous in this area. He doesn't practice anymore because he's, you know, old. But
he was the grandfather of Honda. So
I mean,
he was
very
super
different.
Chilled.
Very different approach. And back then as well, it's not like it is now, where there's much more fear around going past 41 weeks and so on. You know, it was still normal to go to 42 weeks, and then after that you would potentially talk about induction or something like that. So times have changed.
Yes, I feel that, you know, it was great. And he stopped practicing pretty soon after that as well, so I was really happy to be with David, because he was lovely and gave me a lot of specialists. I did need a lot of guidance from him through the pregnancy, because as much as I had a great pregnancy, I'm saying I had a great pregnancy, but I did have real struggles with anemia. I'd struggled with anemia through my whole sort of menstruating years. So in pregnancy, and I had been vegetarian for many years. So I actually came to eating red meat, buffalo meat, actually, during my pregnancy, which I ravenously took to like a hungry little dog.
Because your body was like, I need this.
So, we did a lot of buffalo.
It's interesting.
Pasta.
We talked about that buffalo meat. Yeah, because he's this organic butcher.
Yeah, in Byron buffalo. At the time.
It yeah, was, amazing.
Because it was buffaloes. My understanding was that it was very high in iron.
Mm.
And it was very lean as well. So.
The same with kangaroo. Very
I tried
good.
Kangaroo. Oh, yeah. My gosh. That had me hopping around, man. Seriously, that I couldn't sleep on that stuff.
Yeah, right.
Oh, the energy of that. I don't know what it was, but I remember just being awake, just going, kangaroo's not for me.
No. And lamb.
Yeah, I didn't really like lamb.
Kangaroo.
But the buffalo was good. So, but I still, even in eating the red meats and doing a lot of supplementation, my levels just, I don't think they ever got like above 7 or something. Yeah. Like it was so low.
Well, it's hard to kind of start. And this is a really good point for anyone listening. You know, if you're anemic and, or, you know, you naturally have low iron, you might not be pregnant yet. You're just trying to conceive or you want to conceive. Like up it already before. Oh. Because it's hard when you get so much more blood volume on board and you naturally lose. You know, you go down in levels naturally.
Oh, really? Yes.
And so, you know, it's something to think about preconception wise and
definitely,
preferably Anna. Years before, really, like really. Optimize your body if you want to do a conscious conception.
Really, I really hoe to that, you know, because it became like a really big factor then in my actual birthing. So when I was in labor, or the labor had started, so I came down here and was swimming here, and you know, it was I'd been just walking around the neighborhood for the couple of days and came down here and was swimming, and you know, I fully intended to just stay here. I was like on all fours just over there, and as the swell's sort of sweeping along, you know, I was just fully dancing, you know, through the contractions and things, and just going, yeah baby, we're just gonna hit me here. And I totally believed it, you know. I mean, I totally was open to the baby just like coming out during one of those little waves, you know. So that was beautiful, because I have total faith in the mother, and I had total faith, like I was just had total faith and trust in all the women who had ever birthed before me, all my lineage of women who had ever birthed before me. I just felt completely wrapped and held in them. I had total faith in, you know, the energy of the tides and the cosmos, you know. I just knew that I was part of life, and this life knew exactly how to bring life and take life and be. So so I was ready, and the river was probably ready, and the baby felt ready, and but my partner was like, come on, we gotta go. So that was a little tricky, you know, but you know, that's your birthing partner. So you know, for me it was my actual partner, but it can be another person as well, and it's great to maybe have that little bit more logic at the time, because you can be pretty tripped out when those hormones are pumping through and it's all getting excited, and you know, you can, you know, probably maybe not make some great decisions sometimes. So anyway, we left here and went home, and then started to prepare to go into the birthing unit, and I rang a girlfriend. And I was like, I was tripping out because the veins in my hands were so engorged. And I was just like, whoa, look at this. This is fantastic. And she was on the phone and she went, Baba, I think you're like getting a little closer to needing to go to the birth center. You might want to start like making your way there. And I was like, oh, okay. You know. And again, I think it was, I just wanted to be at home. I wanted to be in the river. You know, I haven't ever really been in hospitals much and things like that. I didn't really want to race to the hospital. It's not really my default, you know. I'll go to all the alternative therapies first before. But there is place for, there's definitely place for the medical, you know, profession, definitely. So I'm grateful for that. So, yeah, so we made our way there. It's only a short drive, but we had to stop a few times because the, you know, I just wanted to hop out of the car during the contractions and breathe and do a little dance and things. And yeah, we got there and, you know, labored through the night nicely, slowly. But in hindsight, again, what I've learned from that is that, so, and I had a very dear friend there with me, and we had various midwives coming in. and I was drinking lots of fluids and, you know, and I was sweating a little bit and things like that, but I wasn't peeing. And I wasn't super conscious that I wasn't peeing.
And for everyone listening, you know, because I'd love to talk to this, if you don't pee during labor, if you go for hours and hours, but you're drinking a lot, so you're gathering this big bladder, you know, a woman can hold a lot, like a liter or even more than that, actually. It can be lots of water, lots of urine. That can prolong your labor, yeah. Absolutely. So I always encourage mamas to go at least every 2 hours to the toilet, because it can make you have a longer labor, because it competes with the space for the head to descend, right?
Wow.
Yeah. And what it also can do is that it can actually make you have a bleed after birth, because the womb can't contract again, because there's so much room in there being held open in the womb space because of the big bladder.
Wow.
So you were drinking and drinking, and you did have quite a long labor as well.
I did, because I'd been going for a couple of days as well, even though it was not hectic, but it's still a little exhausting, and I probably hadn't been eating large amounts or sleeping a lot with excitement. I mean, I was so excited. So,
yeah. You know, and that's the thing.
I was so excited.
As a first time mama,
yeah.
You know, you try some midwife, say like, oh, that's so exciting. You're starting to niggle, you know.
Yeah.
Just try to ignore it. Yeah. Try to rest.
Yeah.
Try to just whatever.
But no, I definitely think I did too much exercise.
Yes. Yeah. Most mamas will attest to that, especially if you've had a, you know, that kind of 2 day marathon,
yes.
Which obviously the first kind of 24 hours is probably not that intense, but it still kind of maybe keeps you up.
Oh,
or
and you're so aware.
And you're excited.
You're excited and you're going over your birth plan and you're gathering the bags. And
love it. And my gosh, you know, you can say whatever, but no one will actually take that advice and do it, you know.
Yeah, no, it's crazy. My husband decided to dismantle something in the car, you know, so before at the last moment, you know, and then we end up having to get the NRMA guy there because the NRMA guy, you know, when we're meant to be soon going to the hospital, and the NRMA guy said to me, what were you thinking? And I think he was just expressing his excitement as well. It's just like, oh, I might change the carburetor or something. It was just like great, you know, so it's that energy, the energy stirring for sure, you know. So yeah, but so yeah, getting back to the pee, so yes, a lot of drinking. My friend had made tea, some lovely herbal tea and things, which I was drinking a lot of. I did not pee, and no one mentioned to me that I should pee. I don't know if it was because I was, you know, I was 36 years old. I don't know if they figured I should know when to pee and when not to pee, or I don't know.
You don't know.
No, I didn't know stuff, you know. And, you know, as much as I know some stuff I don't know still, you know, and that's life, you know. So, yeah, anyway, so I birthed Brahmani, and it went well. I didn't experience really strong contractions to push her.
So the bearing.
The bearing. I never really, which when I look back, you know, and hear other birth stories, it sounds so intense and like the big power. And I'm just like, I really didn't experience that.
And that's, you know, for some women, that's normal. That's
yeah,
normal.
That must be.
Yeah, because we're all different.
Yeah.
And so just dial back a bit. You're laboring during the night. When did you start, though, having that, even though it wasn't very strong, but when did you start feeling, okay, so now here's the baby, you know, descending, here's me birthing?
Not till, so she, Brahmani was born at 6:26 a.m. So, it wouldn't have been till, you know, the early hours of the morning sort of thing, you know, probably 4-5 p.m. or something like that. Or even, because I remember I had a long, the transition time where you sort of, where it goes, what's that called? You know, for me, I could rest very nicely.
Oh, okay. So at one point during labor, when you've gone through the active phase for a long time, and you, well, a long time depends on the woman, obviously, how long that is. But, you know, you come towards the end, there can be this natural pause.
Yes.
So you have the first stage, which is the stage where you're opening, your cervix is dilating and effacing, it's thinning out and all of that. And when you're fully open, say, oh, you know, we're coming close to being fully open, because that's usually what we call transition. You can have transition time when you're like 7, 8, 9 centimeters. It's more than maybe either a person vomits, like that physical kind of release of having that, you know, feeling happening, you're opening so wide. Or you can have this emotional, spiritual crisis come over you where you go like, I can't do this, it's too intense, everything feels too intense. That's usually what signifies like what is a transition time. That for somebody can be an hour, 2 hours. Yeah. That for somebody can be 10 minutes, right? So that's very different. And then what you're talking about is actually coming into the latent second stage, which is you're probably fully open, and then your body has a break.
It had a lovely long break, actually.
I remember just cuddling up to this
beanbag and just sort of
having a break. For some women, that can be a few minutes. For some, that can be half an hour, an hour.
Yeah.
You know, it can be very different for every woman. Mm. And, you know, especially in hospitals, you're probably not so much encouraged to stay in that. The medical professionals probably go like, oh, let's tick this along. Why are you stopping? If you're in your home or you're with an independent midwife, they might go, you know, that's okay. You just have a rest now, because your body, especially you, for example, because you had this very long first labor, which is normal for a lot of women to have, one day, 2 days, sometimes longer, obviously not fully active, but still niggling, and you're in pre-labor. And you probably needed that long rest.
Yeah, it was nice. And I was actually, you know, in the birthing unit, they were great. You know, the midwives were great, and I was able to rest then, but still no pee. So that was So then, yeah, then things did pick up. You know, I don't remember it super clearly, but you know, it picked up, and then there was a sort of an examination or something that indicated that Brahmani, you know, wasn't in like, you know, big distress, but there was some meconium show or something like that.
Right.
And because I wasn't getting you know, the sort of stronger contraction, pushing, bearing down contractions, and I was probably pretty fatigued also because of my super low iron as well, David suggested, you know, he said quite clearly, Baba, you need to just, we need to get the baby out. You know, you need to get the baby out now. And you sort of, so push through. I was encouraged to push through whatever power was there, sort of thing. And so I did, and that only took a couple of times, sort of thing. And she, you know, and I was supported by my husband from, he was behind me, and I was sort of squatting down, and, you know, and that, yeah, she came. And you know, that was incredible.
Did you get her up to your chest? Was she having a bit of a cry?
I can't remember so well. I think she did. I mean, I remember like seeing her and going, oh my God, she's got a vagina. It's a vagina. It's a vagina. It's a vagina.
Because you didn't know that it was going to be a girl.
You know, yeah, but not that. I mean, now, you know, of course, dialoguing around that, I probably wouldn't be so, you know, gender specific or anything like that. But it surprised me, you know, I loved it. Yeah. And I was saying, it's vagina, but, anyway, yeah, and it was beautiful, and yeah, and I love birth. I love it. It's an incredible portal to, you know, infinity and beyond. It's just, I love it so much. I loved the whole experience, and but yeah, it became quite evident quickly that I needed some help. Yeah, because I had so what eventuated them is that I had a postpartum bleed. So Brahmani, I was placed up on the bed. So yeah, the bleed didn't happen straight away, like in that exact moment of birth.
Yeah.
So then I got up on the bed, on a bed that was there, and she was with me. And then the bleed began.
Yeah, you started bleeding, yeah.
And I started bleeding incredibly a lot. And the Brahmani was given to my husband, and sort of the medical staff really became alert and on, and acted very quickly, and I'd wanted to have a lotus birth, so I'd had my little bags packed of, it was in my birth plan, and I had the little, you know, bag to put the placenta in. To that, the lotus birth is where the placenta stays with the baby, so the umbilical cord isn't cut, and you wrap the I'm not sure of where the tradition's from, actually. I probably knew back then, but I forget now. And the placenta is wrapped and everything, and I had a special little bag for it, and it stays with the baby until it naturally comes away from the baby's belly button. Yeah. So that was my intention. I'd had some friends do that. I thought it was really nice, and it was on my birth plan. But then David said, "Bubba, we're going to need to cut your cord." Invited Warwick to cut it, and I was like, "But I'm going to have a lotus." And he went, "No, no, no, you're hemorrhaging." Mm. And I was like, "Whoa!" You know, I was aware I was bleeding, but I wasn't aware I was hemorrhaging. So he cut Warwick cut the cord and had Brahmani there, and they cathetered my bladder, through your urethra?
Yes.
Yes, and because they
part of the management. So uh-huh. if a woman bleeds, that's a part of the management, because that could be one of the reasons Mm-mm. that the bladder is very full Mm-mm. and is causing the bleeding. Because 70% of the time why a woman bleeds is because the uterus, the womb, is tired Mm-mm. and it can't contract for some reason. It can be that it is exhausted. You did have a long labor, so that could be a part Mm-mm. of it. One other reason can be being anemic, which you were.
Yeah.
That is why it's super, super duper important if you are anemic in pregnancy to not dismiss that.
Definitely.
But really, you know, maybe even having an iron infusion or something in pregnancy because it is a cause of bleeding postpartum. And then another cause can be that you have a full bladder, which you had. So you had all three of them.
Yes, yes. Mm. And, in you know, looking back, the lessons I've learned is really taking into consideration the things that you yourself can minimize the risks in doing, not you know, really, like I probably could have done a little more research about those things, and you know, and how bizarro that the body hemorrhages when it's got no iron, like, you know, you would think, oh, the body, my thought was like, oh, the body wouldn't do that, because why would it want to do that? But it does.
Yes. Because you have less clotting factors.
Truly, truly. Mm. So, yeah, so the hemorrhage was very severe. Like, it was litres of blood.
Mm.
And the urine was a lot, a litre more. I don't know the exact, but it was like a full one of the bag, the plasticky bag. Like, right. It was so much.
Oh, my gosh, that's probably more than 1 litre. That's probably a few litres, yeah. Yep.
So they were like, the doctors and nurses were like, whoa, okay.
Whoa.
And at the same time, I could feel myself slipping. I was slipping away. And I had a history of near-death experiences. So I knew that feeling quite well. And it was a little bit of a default for me in sort of life-death situations, that it is sort of a place where my soul, spirit, consciousness decides to wander off to, decided to wander off to. So so they, and the sister that was beside me was, you know, trying to, you know, allocate the pulse and things like that, and she started saying, I can't find a pulse, there's no, you know, pulse and things. And my husband had the baby, and he was holding the baby in my face, sort of going, don't do this, Bubba, don't stay with us, stay, you know, your baby's here, don't go, you know. And I was just sort of going
without, like, you know, obviously going down the rabbit hole of all those stories, but just for our listeners, so Bubba has a history of having had three, before this fourth one, three near-death experiences. So there was a history there that most likely wasn't fully closed. That what that connection for you was quite simple. There was oh, that's nice. Mm-hmm. Yeah, oh, there's a light.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to speak a bit to that experience, just that time at the birth?
Yeah, it definitely was something that I didn't know. And I knew that it was a possibility, and that it's not a scary possibility. In my previous experiences, where I ended up, or I don't know. It's a bit hard to articulate through human language, our language, yeah. My language. But you know, it's for me, it was a very light, very warm, very welcoming place.
Yeah.
No fear. No, just total acceptance that this is source. You know, this is and all is well.
And your partner knew that, so he was like, yeah. "Don't go there, yeah. Baba."
Yeah. So I'm going. Oh, the baby's out. Great. I'll just go on holiday over here in the new life, you know, or not. But there was, there's also, so for me, because I'd sort of hopscotched between that place and this place a couple of times, it's a little bit of a playing thing, you know. So I don't remember, like in past times I had consciously chosen to come back in my body, especially the first time it happened after a very serious car accident at the age of 16, and I actually said, I'm going back, you know. Yeah. And I came back and I survived and I was very lucky, and the other times wasn't such a conscious choice. But this time, yeah, I don't quite remember it being a conscious choice, but you know, there was the pull. I've just birthed my first baby, you know. Yeah. And my husband's there and life's there and her life's there. So, but I think more my body was able to respond to the help that the medical practitioners were giving me. So once the urine was out, and then Anna was explaining to me earlier that I remember getting jabbed in the legs.
The Sertoline, and probably other stronger medications as well, like ergometrin and some other stuff that they probably gave you.
So that they were able to get the hemorrhaging under control, and my body responded, and I came back and came to, and was, you know, I was severely depleted, but and it was beautiful, you know, to be with my little bubba. And soon after that I was, you know, trans, because there was speaking of having transfusions, and I really didn't want a transfusion at the time. Again, it was sort of, I don't know if it was my own strong beliefs, or whether it was like a, you know, cultural conditioning that I'd picked up, or beliefs I'd picked up, but I did not want a transfusion.
A blood transfusion,
yeah. So, and I was given iron shots straight away, which in hindsight, again, I would have really taken with my following pregnancies I had, you know, before pregnancies, before I was pregnant, and then during pregnancies,
right.
And after. But after the hemorrhage, I had to have a lot of, so I didn't have an iron transfusion. I was transported to Lismore Base Hospital and kept there for observation, and then brought back to the birthing centre, and the next morning, and stayed there for 5 days, which was very nourishing. The midwives were gorgeous, and my friends were able to bring me incredible food, and just I could just rest, you know, with my bubba. And again, like, it was like, oh, I'm not home and things like that. So just surrendering to what was, you know. But there I was being cared for, fed, all her nappies and things were being washed and clean, and I was being washed and clean, and you know, I was so depleted that it was the best place for me to be.
Yeah.
When it was time to come home, I came straight down here like 5-6 days later, and you know, brought baby to here, and you know, and then started life at home. And then it was tough, you know, because I was so knocked around.
Which is such a great lesson for you. And I know that you took that lesson for your next pregnancy, that it's the whole thing about being anemic is a big no-no. Like, you know, it's really important.
Really.
I really
didn't know how important it was. Yeah. So, yeah, because I stayed in that depletion for about 7 years, really, and through another two pregnancies. So I fell pregnant about 2 years after that pregnancy. That wasn't conscious conception, even though we've been talking about it, but we didn't like, okay, you know, let's really call this in. I think Brahmani more called it Little Spirit. She named it Gogaziza, and because we'd go out in the night each night and she'd put little things from the stars in a pocket and from the moon, and Little Spirit Night, it was like, you calling in the spirits, bro? You know, and I think she called in a little, she called it a little girl, and anyway, but I was doing a lot to, build myself up at that time. So I'd been having the iron infusions. I had probably was still eating meat a little bit, not that much. I do prefer a non-meat diet. I'm more plant-based. I am a plant-based diet person, but but I was doing a lot of Qigong, which I loved. Mm. I loved it a lot. And I was probably about 8 weeks pregnant, and I was going to classes quite a few times a week, and I felt pretty good. Like there was still depletion and things. My bleed had come back, so you know, at some time, it took quite a long time after the first pregnancy for my cycle to come back, and I was able to breastfeed Brahmani through everything as well, so that was great. Mm. My milk, you know, fully came through good, and
that's so good too, because that's something that can happen,
right?
Both if you're anemic, but also if you have a really big bleed,
yes,
it can affect your milk supply.
Yes.
So again, ladies listening, like, it's really important with the iron. But you were lucky that you did have a good milk supply.
A great milk supply, plenty milk supply.
Because milk is made out of blood.
Yes, it is the blood. Yes, it feels that. You feel like you're, you know, it's like when you're making the baby, is the blood, the life, you know, the life of
life
spirit is
spirit,
blood.
Yeah.
So I was doing the Qigong because it really, I was doing yoga as well and swimming and, you know, and I had a very clean lifestyle, you know, so I didn't take any drugs and alcohol or anything like that. It's really important to me. I still don't. You know, I really love, you know, the blessing of prana. Like, it's incredible. And, you know, here where we live, we're so blessed to have access to incredible organic food. Mm. And I'm a gardener, so I have live food. And so I was really taking care. When the pregnancy came, I felt quite confident that it was going to be okay. But there was this little thing of, am I really up for it? You know, just there somewhere.
Yeah, still a bit of maybe fear.
Yeah, and I hadn't told anyone that I was pregnant, which, you know, definitely is your own personal choice. Mm. You know, some people get really excited and tell people as soon as they miss a period and things, and then some people keep it, that knowledge for a while. And I think it can depend on your past history as well, if you've miscarried or had trouble conceiving and things, and I honor all those choices of we make. You know, it really is a personal thing, and you know, families and things can get upset and go, why didn't you tell us? Or but it really is you.
Oh yeah.
You and your body and that little soul, you know.
Totally.
And but again, in hindsight, I didn't tell my Qigong master teacher that I was pregnant. And I went to a class on a Saturday morning, and I was feeling really quite good. And it was we do this practice where you're shaking for 2 hours. You're shaking down, shaking. Yeah. And I got home from that practice, and it was a practice that I had enjoyed before. And I got home, and I was home for a couple of hours, and I started to spot blood, and that night I miscarried. And at the time I didn't really put the two things together, and that miscarriage, you know, it was sad, but it was also, I mean, it was sad at the time that it was happening, but then later it actually was quite a relief that I wasn't pregnant, you know, because I don't think my body was ready. And emotionally I wasn't ready. I really wasn't, and things. But when I spoke to my teacher, because then I wasn't at class for a couple of weeks and things, and she contacted me and went, where are you? Because I was very regular at class, and I said, I had miscarriage. And she went, I was not aware you were pregnant. And And I said, yeah, I was. And I told her what had happened, and she said, Babalu, you really should have spoken to me that you were pregnant. But she said, I would not have allowed you to do that practice. She said, that it's a bearing down practice. It's a bit, you know, it's like sending everything down. And she said, definitely, and she's like, she's a master Qigong practitioner. And she said, it holds potential for causing the fetus to come away.
Right.
You know. Yeah. And I was like, whoa, you know. But and I didn't take it on as, oh my God, what did I do? I just accepted what is. That had happened, and I accepted it in the big mysteries of life of perfect, you know, how it is to be, and learn a big lesson about speaking to if you're doing exercises, if you're doing anything.
Totally.
Maybe speak to, well, I would speak to the teachers, the practitioners.
Totally.
Just to let, you know, so maybe you don't want to let all your friends and family know, but
if you're going to a practitioner or a teacher and
let them know.
For sure.
So that was another really big lesson. But I also feel like it also was life stepping in and just going, Bobby, you're not quite ready, you know. And when I look now, like even that I look at my two teens now, I'm like, whew, glad I haven't got one in the middle. You know? And I always send out a little thing to go, because he's going, how are you going, girl? You know? So glad I don't have to drive you to dance, you know. It's like, because I think for me, it was like three, and having them, like I was, you know, because I was 39 by then, so a little bit older again, or 38, turning 30, yeah, so... A little stretched, you know. I had still great energy. I'm a fit, healthy woman. Here I am, 55. Feel amazing, you know.
Yeah.
Still feel like a kid, you know. But physically, emotionally, and in my marriage, there was a lot of tension there. So, I always go, good choice, Kogaziza. You know. So, you know, I think we can just love spirit in all its forms when they come through,
and when they don't.
And when they don't, And if they just visit for a little while and don't. You know, and then I had a sixth pregnancy with Aquila, my son, who's now 15, and that was a conscious conception, and but a different, a conscious conception, but a very difficult pregnancy emotionally. It was like the marriage had gone in a very difficult place, and I pretty much spent the pregnancy under my doona, really, in a very dark place. It wasn't like I had morning sickness, but I had heart sickness.
Yeah.
I was really sad. And, you know, Brahmani, she was only a little girl, and she, you know, she was with me a lot, you know, all the time and things. So, you know, I tried my best to sort of, and we'd come here, we'd still come here all the time down to the river. That was my solace. And, but interestingly, my son, who journeyed with me to that place, he's so tuned in to me. I can have a flicker of an eye, and he'll just go, are you right, Mum? You know, he knows me. He knows my depths, you know. And he knows my joy as well. But he did know, you know, it's, so how our two souls were connected, whether we've journeyed before like that, it's special, you know. And it's special to have someone that's really got your back like that, that really knows you that well.
Yeah, you have a beautiful connection with your son.
Yeah, yeah.
15-year-old that says I love you to his mom. Isn't that beautiful?
It is. It's really nice. Yeah. It's really nice. And with my daughter, she's great, but she's got a different story, you know. So my birth with him.
What was the early signs of labor approaching with Aquila?
So Aquila, he also was around 40 weeks, I think. Maybe 39 weeks with Aquila. Early signs of labor with him. So I was 40 then. So, and I'd had the postpartum bleed.
Yeah.
In the system, Again, my partner didn't want to do home birth.
Yeah, and you're considered high risk.
I was suddenly high risk.
Oh, you're geriatric.
Oh my gosh.
You're a dinosaur having a baby.
Yeah, all these constructs came out and I was just like, damn straight, what? I'm amazing. You know, I'm a woman. I am power. So I didn't want to be a patient. I really didn't want to be. So I couldn't birth with David. I think he may have even retired then. So, yeah, so I had to go to Tweed Hospital. I had to, could go to Lismore or Tweed. Actually, then I couldn't go to Lismore for some reason. I had to go to Tweed. Mm. Tweed is like off country for me. You know, it's like, I mean, I love Minjibul country, but it's off country for me. Mm. So, yeah, very different thinking. I think I went there once as a, for a look around and things and was like, oh, I really got a feel for here, you know, just off country. And yeah, so but I had because of the experiences with the early pregnancy with Brahmani's birth, I also accepted that, you know, I would roll with what was being offered to me. You know, I wasn't going to rock up to Mullumbimby. We still had the Mullumbimby Birth Centre then. We now have the Byron Birth Centre, but yeah, I was going to follow somewhat of their protocol but really try and stay in my power, because I knew so much more about birth then, because I'd already birthed. And yeah, and I was feeling good. I still had a level of anemia, but not my iron levels, because I'd done all the preparation and life and everything. They were, you know, I was probably in the 14 range or something. I wasn't in the 7 and the 4s and the 2s or something. I was doing better. Emotionally, I wasn't great. So that weighed heavily. But, yeah, so early signs of labour for Aquila was I experienced like a gushing of fluids, which it was about 11 p.m. at night, which I thought was my waters breaking. Because in the first birthing, I don't actually have memory around the waters breaking. Maybe I thought the water's breaking. I don't know. I can't quite remember. I mean, there's a potential that I went to do a pee and the water's breaking. I thought it was a pee. I don't know. I can't remember, actually. I really can't remember the water's breaking in the first pregnancy.
Yeah, most women will break their waters in the throes of labor, even at the birth of the head, or birth of the baby. So
really?
Yeah. So only 10% will break their waters before labor starts, for example.
Oh my gosh, see, there you go. I just learned this right now. I thought the breaking of the waters was the sign.
No.
Oh my gosh, Dana. That's amazing.
Only, that's only Hollywood. Obviously, there are women having that.
That's only Hollywood.
Yeah, because it's more dramatic. They want the drama, don't they? So,
That's so interesting. Yeah. Thank you.
Most women will have it during the labor at some point, most likely at the end of labor.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, Anna, look, here I am, 20 years on from birthing, 15 years on from birthing, and I'm learning something. I love it. It's just it's a lifelong process, isn't it?
Totally.
Amazing. Yeah, so all I thought this liquid was, you know, the plug moving away and the water's coming.
Yeah, the water's breaking, the amniotic fluid.
Yeah, so I talked to my girlfriend, Fiona, who was going to be my doula, and she said, well, Baba, you know, you're going to Tweed. I know you don't really want to, but that's where you're going, so maybe make your way up there and things. So we organized for Brahmani to come and get picked up by our dear friend Jono, and then we mooched up there, and there wasn't a lot of like, I'd been a little bit moochy, not like with Brahmani. There was a bit of niggling and like I knew it was time, it was close, it was time, but there wasn't, I hadn't been doing the days and days of walking and all that sort of thing. So it was a little bit more of a surprise of, oh, okay. So we went up and they admitted us and everything, and because I'd had the bleed, they put a cannula in my arm straight away, and I had to sign off that I would accept
blood transfusion.
The in the Syntocin or whatever. What if they wanted to put in my arm something?
Yeah, Syntocin or Pitocin if you're in America is what you're given if you prevent the bleed.
Yes. So I had to sort of sign off on that, you know, to accept that and a few other things.
Well, everything that's ever done to you in a hospital setting, you have to get consent for. Or not in the hospital, in home birth, whatever. You know, if a midwife or any healthcare professional will want to do anything, you have to say yes or no. And if you say no, they can't. Only if you were unconscious can they then give you something to save your life, right? But if you're conscious and say no, you're not, as a healthcare professional, legally allowed to do anything to you. You are a sovereign being, even if you're in the hospital.
Right, yes, yes. So, but in that sense, like, to birth, I mean, I was sort of, it was sort of, it, I mean, not sort of, it was made out that I needed to be in a hospital because of my age and all the that.
Yeah.
But I suppose I could have chosen not to be.
You
right.
could have,
okay,
yeah.
But then with my partner and my own being, that's the option we took. So, yes, we proceeded with that. But I was very determined not to be a patient. I was the birthing goddess of Babaloo.
Yes.
Yes. So I had brought these red strips of fabric and I wrapped that around my wrists. And they were there to remind me of my Kali energy and all my ancestral women lineage and all the women that had birthed before and that I'd birthed before. I knew this body knew had wisdom in this. So
yeah.
So I wrapped my wrists over the fabric over the cannula and things, and but not much was happening. Like there was, you know, it had all gone very quiet in the labor scene. So they said we could stay there the night and which we did, because it was pretty, you know, it was really, you know, 1-2 in the morning and things. So we stayed there the night, and in the morning, there was a little bit of activity. Like I was definitely in labor, but, you know, it wasn't sort of on sort of thing. We were still waiting for the main team member to really kick in. And so they said, you know, I had to stay in the hospital. I wasn't allowed to get in the bath. I wasn't a thing. And I just went, I'm out of here. I'm like, I'm not staying here. And so we just sort of waited till it was quiet. And we left our things there. So it looked like maybe we were just down at the cafeteria or something. But, we left. And we didn't go too far. We just went down. The Tweed Hospital is on the Tweed River, near the Tweed River. So, I'm an outdoors girl, and you know, I want to be with my feet on the earth. So we went down and we walked the river all day, and it was so beautiful. It was very bonding for my husband and I, because we'd had a lot of distance through the pregnancy, and it was a really gifted time to drop in together, to really come together as, you know, and go, we're going to have this baby, it's happening. So that was very beautiful. And we shared laughter and silliness and things, and we felt like sort of naughty teenagers that had run away from hospital, which I really liked because I'm inherently a rebel. And and we walked and talked, and then the labor proceeded beautifully, and I just danced. Oh, it was such a beautiful dance, that labor. I had this beautiful dance of just sort of really just, you know, really my body swaying from side to side through the contractions and in my breathing. And a lot of that had come through like my yoga practices and Qigong and just lived experience of knowing what was happening. It was my second birth, you know. It was very different. I was weeing.
Yay.
Peeing, pissing, behind bushes, whatever, you know, drinking, peeing, pushing. Yeah, that was great. There were, you know, so all these lessons then were with me. I felt good. I felt, you know, felt good. And so then as the afternoon came, the contractions got more and we walked back into the hospital and there was a big kerfuffle over where we'd been and what are we doing and, you know, broken all these rules. And I really didn't take any of it on at all. I had my Kali bands on and I was like ready to do this. And what were they going to say? You know, we were back, we were ready and the baby was coming. So, and my friend came then and it was beautiful. So here we were in an environment where I didn't really want to be initially, but we totally surrendered to it. And my girlfriend came, and she was a Buddhist practitioner at the time, and she just bought beautiful prayer flags and beautiful maroon fabrics, and we just covered up all the gear and the lighting, and we had beautiful music, and we thought we'd created home in the hospital. So we were saying, we're having a home birth in the hospital.
Yeah.
We loved it. Yeah. It was great. And so I just, you know, did my dancing and singing and breathing, and then I thought it felt like everything was going nice, and then the midwife decided to just do a vaginal examination to see where I was at, and I was like on all fours, and she came behind me and placed her, you know, fingers inside my vagina to feel up to the cervix, right?
Yeah.
To see where that was. And in that procedure, my waters really did break. And they broke all over her. And it was like this. And I was sort of giggling and realised. And looking back, and she was literally looked drenched, and we were all laughing, and I was like, oh, right, now my water's broken. And it was pretty comic, you know. And it felt good.
Yeah.
It felt good in my body.
Release.
Yeah, yeah. I was like, oh, you know. There it is.
So that's just going back to what you said, because a lot of women will tell me this in their birth stories, that they think that their waters have broken, mm-hmm. or women have come, you know, to me as a midwife and said they think their waters are broken because they get very juicy, mm-hmm. and they can have this big kind of gush of fluids mm-hmm. from the vagina at the end of pregnancy. And it can just be that you're very juicy. You mm-hmm. are very juicy. The 3 weeks coming up-ish, mm-hmm. you know, towards labor and birth, the vagina just goes really juicy, because that's, you know, it's lubricant.
Yeah.
It's also the immunity informing for the baby to come through. It just amps up all that good flora in there, you know, so that the baby gets really good immunity.
Mm-mm.
And so, but it can be a lot.
It can be a lot.
And you can think that it's your waters, because you're just like, whoa, that all my, like, my pants and my underwear just got drenched,
truly,
you know?
Truly.
But it's just juiciness, wow. right? It's just, and the way to test it, and I've said this several times in this podcast, but, you know, if you're a new listener, the way you can test it is that you lie down for maybe 20 minutes, half an hour,
mm-hmm.
and you put a pad in,
mm-hmm.
and then when you sit up,
mm-hmm.
If it is your waters leaking or have gone, you will have a gush then, right? Because you know when you have your period and you lie down and you wake up in the morning,
yeah.
you always have that kind of gush, don't you?
Yeah.
You have to run to the toilet and you just hope you're not going to overflow.
Hand over the cupping over your vulva.
And that's the thing. So that's the trick, right?
Yeah.
And then you can look at the pad, and you can
amazing,
smell
Anna.
It, because if you smell it, amniotic fluid smells like semen.
Yes. Wow.
And if it doesn't smell like semen, it probably isn't.
Wow.
But obviously, if you think it is, you should always contact your healthcare professional, your midwife or your doctor. But, you know, that's something you can do
yourself.
That's amazing.
And I wonder if, like, we get juicy, because it is nice making love in that period before birth.
It's probably because you're really juicy that you do feel like making love.
You're
so juicy down there.
Yeah,
like, I can feel that.
Truly, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Totally.
Which was in my first labor, but not my second. My husband and I weren't in that juicy space at that time, unfortunately. But
yeah, maybe not in public. It's outside of the hospital. Wouldn't be the right spot either.
Too funny. Oh my gosh. So then when the waters did really break, she was like, I'm just gonna go and get changed. It was pretty funny. And you know, you want to have fun, you want it not to be totally serious all the time. I mean, it's serious, you know, there's serious stuff going down, but it's great to laugh and make jokes and be, you know, celebration, you know, this bubba's coming. And you know, because it can get pretty serious and heavy. You know, so it was good to have a laugh. And then it proceeded quite quickly after that. Like, Aquila was born at 9:23 p.m. so remember, a beautiful light rain happening, and because I mean I was a little obsessed about peeing this time because of the postpartum hemorrhage and all, so I actually spent a lot of time on the toilet And like, you know, with the tap running and running water over the pelvic area and things, just to make sure I peed. I was very, you know, and I peed and it felt great.
Yes.
It really felt great to pee. And I loved that I had that knowledge, you know, so that was another tick, risk helping, you know, not to say it was totally alleviated, but I felt it in my power to go, I know how to, I must pee.
Yes.
I'm peeing. You know, so that was good. So I was actually, and again, I didn't get those really strong bearing down urges. So that just must be me in my being. And, but I was on the toilet when, Aquila fully crowned and it felt like the toilet's really supportive. Like
love the toilet.
Your butt's supported and you can, you know, you can bear down and you can even climb up on it and squat using it. And, you know, because it can become physically exhausting for your supporters as well to hold you up because you're sort of nearly dead weight a lot of the time, you know, so, and you might be exhausted. So, and for me also emotionally, like, you know, I really wanted my partner there, but because there was a little bit of distance and things, I don't know, the toilet worked really good as a support, you know. So, but at that time then my husband and my girlfriend came either side of me and the midwife suggested I just move slightly forward and you know, and Aquila came very quickly then, like he just gushed out and but Aquila now he loves to tell the story that I was nearly born in the toilet and I go, no you weren't, and he goes, yes I was, you know, so he gets some fun times out of that. Yeah, so that all went great and I think, would they have given me the Syntocin because I had to sign that, or I chose to sign that off?
Yeah.
I think I remember getting a Syntocin thing.
Yeah.
So then, all was great and I had Aquila, you know, skin to skin, yummy. And then after a while they were saying, okay, we'll get the placenta coming because, again, I wasn't having full contractions for that, and that really wasn't happening, and like at all, and I was I was kneeling and with the baby and, you know, I was feeling amazing, but so the midwife said that she would like, you know, have a little tug on the cord of the placenta to see if that would help, and she really tugged it. She gave it a good tug, and Anna's explained to me that maybe that wasn't the best thing to do.
Yeah, you have to be very careful when you do. It's called controlled cord traction for a reason.
Right.
Not tugging.
Tug of war.
Tug of war. because that's a risk that you can snap the cord, which happened for you.
It happened, Anna. So the next thing, she's got the cord in her hand, and I'm going, oh my god, that's so dodgy.
That so
and then I'm looking at the cord, going, is that a dodgy cord? Like, you know, and of course my mind's going, oh my god, what if that had broken when the baby was inside? And, you know, all these thoughts started running, and then I had to go, Bubba, the baby's out and everything is good. And but she's holding the cord and there's no placenta attached to that. So I think she was slightly embarrassed as well.
Oh gosh, I would be mortified if I had ever done something like that, because you know, that's very much a no-no. You know, you must be very careful because that is the risk that can break if you tug too hard. So you should only put a little bit of pulling and then feel, does it come away, and then just working with the placenta.
Truly.
Working, you know, very,
because it has its own time as well.
Yes,
doesn't
of course.
It's done it such a magnificent job. And that's what I came to. So there started to be talk of surgery, going upstairs for a bit of surgery. And I was like, and especially after the last birth and everything, I was still wanting to not go into that full intervention and things. And I just went, no, just please give me some time. I'll just talk to my placenta and, you know, honor it and say, thank you so much for the incredible work that you've done. In growing the life of my baby and everything you've done.
Yeah.
And so there was a little bit of discussion back and forth, and so I actively started to do that, and with Aquila on my chest, and really go deep into myself and speak to my placenta, speak to my body. And it really felt clearly that it also did not want to go upstairs and go into surgery. It was really happy where it was, you know. And then this female doctor came, and she was just an angel. She really was an angel. You know, she came and just spoke to me very calmly and said, you know, okay, Babalu, you know, what would you like to do? And I said, look, I'd really like to give it time and, you know, it will come. I really believe it will come. And she said, okay, well, I'll work with you, you know. So she internally, you know, she placed her hand internally, and she was sort of doing this little tickly thing inside, and I was, you know, singing the placenta's praises, going, it's time to go, you know, and it came. Yeah. It came out, and it was beautiful, and I just saw pure love in this being, you know, that she'd really seen me and probably witnessed the fear of further intervention or intervention at all or something, you know, like I really felt seen in that moment and seen as a mother in, you know, a birthing woman in her power to go to see this to the end if possible without any intervention. So yeah, I'll never forget, you know, I'm quite teary right now because I felt she was great, you know, all the people who were with me were great, but it was like this, she came in right at that time, you know. So then we had the placenta out, and yeah, and it was great. And Aquila was very settled. He was healthy, you know, blessed. Both my children were very healthy, didn't need any care, you know, medical intervention or care. I feel very, very blessed of that.
And he didn't bleed.
And I didn't bleed. And that, oh my gosh, I was celebrating that, I tell you. We just kept saying, there's no bleed. There's no bleed. You know, I mean, because it was significant that I had, I didn't bleed. It was significant. And I kept sort of like looking, you know, looking, is there blood? There was no bleed, and there was no, I'd had a massive, massive herpes outbreak after the first birth as well, I think because of the bleed and
the stress.
I'd traveled with herpes since I was 18 and, but oh my gosh, I'd never experienced anything like this. It was, you know, it was horrific. So, you know, there was no herpes, there was no bleed, there was not, you know, absolute depletion thing. Yeah. So I was able to go home the next morning and I was able to care for my baby that time around. My milk came well and everything. I healed well. I'd had a slight tear that healed well. Really, you know, so grateful and really had taken those lessons from the previous birth experience into the second birthing experience, and then past that was able to take that wisdom and that knowledge into further doulaing with friends after the birth of my children, you know, because I'd birthed and had these experience, you know, life lessons, life and death lessons. I also then did a ceremony between Brahmani's birth and Aquila's birth. I had done a personal ceremony for myself about not swaying between here and you know, more the source or spirit or however people want to call it, you know, the near death experiences. So I'd made a really clear pact with myself to go, I'm here.
Yeah.
I'm here for the duration of my life, however long that may be, but no more back and forthing.
Yeah.
You know, so that was really significant for me.
It was a conscious choice for you.
Conscious choice, and it's clear, you know, I haven't had any of those experiences since, and I welcome death. Like, I welcome death each day. It's okay. It's fine. You know, I'm happy for it to happen when it happens, but there's not going to be the hopscotching between. So that's been great because I really feel like I'm yeah, I'm grounded on in earth time right now. And for my children, and you know, they've grown well, and you know, I've now watched my daughter come into her menstrual cycling and sexual life, and just to be able to, yeah, you know, since day one, I've had a very open dialogue with them, and so just to share things that were never spoken to me, so I feel we can really turn those cycles around. Just to give, you know, a lot more platform to make choices from, and
yeah,
you know, you're still going to make your own choices, but yeah, just to have that little bit of, yeah, like passing down the wisdom, like you're doing with these podcasts.
Like
passing
you're doing, coming on and sharing your wisdom and your birth stories. I was just thinking that when you said before how you brought this to your community. Well, now you're bringing it worldwide, you know.
Wow, bless.
Yeah, oh, so women listening to this, you know, will know this. They will pee in labor.
They will pee.
They will not be anemic.
No. They will not be a patient. They will have their Kali ribbons on.
Totally.
And yeah, and just, you know, and all absolute gratitude to the mysteries of life, you know, and death is the, you know, the great portals of that you're offered in birth. I mean, it is still my favorite place to hang out. You know, birthing is incredible.
Yeah.
Like, it's incredible opportunity, to experience another aspect of this human form, you know, yeah, and to work with spirit, and
we're blessed as women to experience.
I know, this. Right?
Yeah.
It's pretty fun.
So, Babalu, if yes, you had a first-time mama in front of you right now, mm-hmm, who's about to have her first baby, mm-hmm, and she really wants to have a natural and empowering birth experience, what advice or pearls of wisdom would you give to her?
Okay. Well, for trust, you know, trust in the inner wisdom and the wisdom of the body, and in the life form that we are in, trust that it will know, you know, how to birth, and in that trust and deepening in that trust, you know, it gets you, you know, a bit out of the way, at the logic, the mind out of the way, so the life processes can happen, and follow up on if there is indicators that that there's risks that you could alleviate, like iron levels and exhaustion levels, you know, it's really the self-care practices, but on the sort of, yeah, level, like the iron, and well, particularly the iron for me, that's the main one I know about. But yeah, and like, maybe don't hesitate on topping those up, you know. I was hesitating on having infusions, which are different to transfusion. It's infusions, it's taking the iron into your body in larger quantities than taking iron tablets and things like that, but they really can bump you up, and B12 and vitamin C. So yeah, finding really practitioners you really trust, your midwives that you really trust, that are open to those amendments in yourself, and yeah, and really knowing that you are supported by the great Mother Earth and all the women. You can definitely call up the strength of all the birthing wisdom from right around the world, whatever your cultural background is, and then through your lineage. I mean, we all come through this incredible, beautiful, you know, power of women. Like, we all came through the vagina and the
viva la vulva
through the vulva. So so you really can call that up, and it'll be there. It's really there. So you can really lean into that as a resource. I would tell them to pee, definitely. Peeing is fabulous, and you know, yeah, keep your fluids up, but pee, And yeah, and so I don't know, be excited and also, you know, yeah, surrendering to the unknown, you know, like you can have your birth plan. You can think how, so as we do, you know, we love to be in control as humans to a lot part of our lives. So, you know, yeah, and going through the birth plan and all, it's all wonderful because it's the focusing in, but then also knowing that it will be as it will be. So if there is medical intervention when you didn't want to have it, or if you have an incredible easy birth when you thought you were going to have a lot of medical intervention, or you know, you might have a surprise birth on the side of the road, you know, so just know that it is the great unknown, and it's a beautiful opportunity to really surrender to that, because it I think in that surrender it is empowering,
so empowering
you know, and and you are not a patient. You are a birthing woman, you know. And even if you're in a situation where, because I do honour that, you know, there are situations where people are hospitalised through their pregnancy. They might be scheduled for caesareans. They, like myself, have to. They might be over a certain age and in their cultural thing.
That does not matter.
None of that matters. You know, you are a birthing woman. That baby is yours and is coming out of your body, whether it is cesarean or natural birth or however it presents, but ultimately you're a birthing woman.
Absolutely. And I really want to speak to that, you know, being, for example, being 40 or even in some countries now actually being 35 as being geriatric now. It's going down in ages. I really want to speak to this because age is not the risk factor, it's your health. And so the reason why it's now 35 or 40, depending which country and wherever you are and whoever you're speaking to, it's because as people age, as women age, they're more likely to maybe develop chronic diseases, right? Like diabetes or overweight or different things that in itself is a high risk factor. And I'm not saying that just because you have one of these you can't have a natural empowering birth, home birth, whatever, but that is why the age has now become a factor as well. You know, just the age depends on how healthy you are, how have you lived your life, you know. And so if you're a woman listening to this and you're 35 to 40 or even older and you're waiting for your first baby to be born, just because of your age is not the reason why you should consider yourself or anyone should consider you high risk. Look at the holistic evidence of every aspect of being a human being, of being a woman. You know, it's not just about the number.
It's a construct. It's a construct.
It's just saying that everyone's the same.
Truly.
And everyone's not the same. You can be 20 and be a very unhealthy person, right? And you can be 50 and be an extremely healthy person, like a 20-year-old. You know what I mean? Like,
truly.
You know, it's so, what's your lifestyle like? What's your stress levels? What's your nutrition? How are you also, you know, how are you taking up your nutrition?
That's the uptake of your nutrition.
So many different factors. Do you have other chronic diseases? Do you have, you know what I mean? Really, women listening to this, it's not about age. And so if you are a geriatric woman, I hate that word, it's horrible. Came up with that? Not a woman, for sure.
No.
Anyways, if you are this woman who are over 40 or 35 in some places, you are not.
35,
you
are not so young.
Geriatric, totally.
So when I look back at photos of myself at 36 with my newborn baby, I mean, I just go, oh, you look like a kid. You know, you know, it's like, I'm like, wow, you're so young. And then Aquila at 40, you know, I was nearly 41 by the time Aquila was coming out. And, you know, it was a little more of a push up as he grew into sort of, you know, toddler and all that. I could feel it a little bit. I mean, I was very healthy and I'd look after her, so I felt good. It's more funny now, like I go, wow, so when I'm 60, he's only going to be 20. when I'm 80, he's going to be 40. Then I'll be dead. And then, you know, and it's all fun if I'm blessed to live through those lives. But, yeah, but it's all perfect. It's all perfect. It's all perfect, however it presents. And, you know, don't give up on thinking that you could have a baby, you know, as your birthdays are going by. It's not it's not written in stone, you know?
We're all
life's
different.
Surprising.
Totally.
Yeah. And I just feel, I mean, well, thanks for interviewing me and sharing this. It's like, just for me to relive this is like, oh, what a gift to myself for today. Like, that's massive to reflect back on those times and see how empowered I was and how much I learnt and how much I surrendered and I got through, you know, and now, you know, my young, beautiful beings are young adults and yeah, what a life. Thank you, Anna.
Thank you so much, Babalu, for coming on the Natural Birth Podcast and sharing your story with us.
Thank you, Anna. Bless.
Hey, Mama. Did you know that you can join me and amazing mamas from around the world sharing resources, birth stories, and conception, pregnancy, and mothering advice in our free Natural and Conscious online mamas community space? Find the link in the show notes and join today.
Thank you for listening. If you love this podcast, then please share it. Grade it on iTunes and leave a comment. If you want to connect on social media, you can find me on Facebook as The Spiritual Midwife or on Instagram as the_spiritual_midwife. Thank you for listening.